Hey, good evening, Truth Seekers. Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Thanks for joining in. It may be a little bit goofy this evening. I'm all whacked up on Benadryl, doing some work outside today, and apparently got hit by a very vicious hornet. What do you think, Kathy? Hornet? Wasp? I think it was a hornet. So my left arm is about the size of 2 footballs.
Ah!
I was thinking about trying to get out of work tonight, but nah. John McCain. How about this guy, huh? How about this guy? You know, now that we're through the hate Barack, hate Hillary phase, and, you know, all the Democrats just going absolutely nuts over that issue, we can really start to listen and pay attention to John McCain. And it's not pretty, folks. It's not pretty. He was giving a speech on energy security in Arlington, Virginia the other day. And I swear, there's something about the way he offered the $300 million prize that just made me think of one of those demented sideshow carnival barkers, the ones that only have 6 teeth, which is a requirement. You may only have 6 teeth when you're in a traveling carnival. But I started thinking, if McCain would talk like this. Step right up, my friends. Hiya, 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 my friends. Everyone's a winner on the midway today. I guess your weight within 5 pounds. I guess your age within 2 years. Hiya, hiya, my friends. Pick your prize. Come here, fella. Don't you want to win a prize for the little lady there? What's your name, sweetheart? Never mind. Test your strength. Ring the bell, and your girl gets her choice. Design a hybrid battery. You get $300 million. Hiya, hiya. That's a single dollar for every man, woman, and child in America. You can buy a lot of kettle corn with that cash. Hiya, hiya.
From now on, we will encourage heroic efforts in engineering.
Hiya!
And we will reward the greatest success.
Hiya! Hiya!
I further propose we inspire the ingenuity and resolve of the American people.
Yeah!
By offering a $300 million prize for the development of a battery package that has the size, capacity, cost, and power to leapfrog the commercially available plug-in hybrids or electric cars.
Hell yeah!
That's $1 for every man, woman, and child in the U.S.
All right.
Small price to pay
for
helping break the back of our oil dependency and should deliver a power source at 30% of the current cost.
All right! I said, all right! Hello? Hello? My friends, nobody in the audience started cheering. What a clown this guy is. He's much worse than Bush. The only thing that McCain doesn't have is a desire to drink baby's blood at least once. No, I'm sorry, that's Cheney. The only thing McCain doesn't have is a desire to kill everything in sight and giggle about it. McCain is not a giggling killer. He's just straight-ahead killer. Hiya, hiya. $300 million prize, huh? Like I wrote today, that's like, I mean, prizes. The Stanley Cup is a prize. Best in Show at the New York Kennel Club is a prize. Eat all your vegetables and you get a dessert. That's a prize. But Jesus Christ, I mean, the single biggest issue facing America, how to drive cars without doing it the way we're doing it, and he wants to turn the research and development into a prize? Stop me before I need another Benadryl. There's a plan in the works. Lawrence Velville, he's the dean and co-founder of the Massachusetts School of Law at Andover, Mass. He's got this plan in the works. It's a conference coming up in September to plan the prosecution of Bush and other high administration officials for war crimes. Now, Lawrence Velville, the dean of the school, I guess we'll call him Dean Larry. Dean Larry says, quote, "This is not intended to be a mere discussion of violations of law that have occurred. It is rather intended to be a planning conference at which plans will be laid and necessary organizational structure set up to pursue the guilty as long as necessary and, if need be, to the ends of the earth." End quote. He got me on that last part, to the ends of the earth. Up to that point, it was like, this is kind of like a Bertrand Russell thing from the 60s. But then he says, to pursue the guilty as long as necessary and, if need be, to the ends of the earth. That would be like in Paraguay, maybe? Isn't that where the Bush crime family, the blood center of the Bush crime family, just bought 10 million acres or something? I don't know. They bought a mountain? I have no idea. Pursue the guilty to the ends of the earth. That's cool. Professor, or I should say Dean Larry, then went on to say, and I'm not trying to mock him. This is a grand idea. I hope he goes through this. I'm sure he will. It's just hard for me to say Belleville. You know, if I say Professor Belleville, it just sounds kind of goofy to me anyway. Let's try it. Professor Belleville went on to say, quote, "We must try to hold the Bush administration leaders accountable in courts of justice. And we must insist on appropriate punishments, including, if guilt is found, the hangings visited upon top German and Japanese war criminals in the 1940s. Hanging! Oh, my God! I love this guy! I love this guy! Professor Lawrence Belleville, Dean of the Massachusetts School of Law at Andover. I love this guy. Appropriate punishments, including, if guilt is found, hanging. Can you see Cheney's feet kicking at the end of a rope? Oh, be still, my beating heart. Woo! Excuse me. Belleville went on to say, past practice has been to allow U.S. officials responsible for war crimes in Vietnam and elsewhere to enjoy immunity from prosecution upon leaving office. Dean Belleville said, quote, "President Johnson retired to his Texas ranch and his defense secretary, Robert McNamara, was named to head the World Bank." Professor, there's no contradiction there. Whoever's responsible for the most violent attempt to impose an American system usually does get that point. How about Wolfowitz? The list goes on and on. But, Professor, you have to admit that we won in Vietnam. Vietnam is now China to the negative third power. It's a little China. The price of labor is getting too high in China, so everything's going to Vietnam. So, Professor, we won. Our little dusky brethren in Vietnam are doing exactly what good little indentured servants do for their capitalist overlords. But I digress. Richard Nixon retired to San Clemente, and his Secretary of State, Henry Kissinger, was allowed to grow richer and richer, Belleville continued. Kissinger. Professor Belleville noted, in the years since the prosecution and punishment of German and Japanese leaders after World War II, those nations' leaders changed their country's aggressor cultures. And he went on to say, one cannot discount contributory cause and effect here. You know, if you hang a few of the perpetrators of war crimes from specific countries, that country tends not to do it again. Right? Belleville went on to say, quote, for Bush, Richard Cheney, Donald Rumsfeld, and John Yoo to spend years in jail or, shudder, go to the gallows for their crimes would be a powerful lesson to future American leaders, end quote. I love this guy. I like this. Now, the conference will take up such issues as the nature of domestic and international crimes committed, which high-level Bush officials, including federal judges and members of Congress, are chargeable with war crimes, which foreign and domestic tribunals can be used to prosecute them, and the setting up of an umbrella coordinating committee with representatives of legal groups concerned about the war crimes, such as the Center for Constitutional Rights, the ACLU, National Lawyers Guild, among others. This is great. This brought tears to my eyes today. Okay, not tears. It brought a lump to my throat. The dean of the Massachusetts School of Law is convening a conference to plan the prosecution of these rat bastards.
You must say I'm unlearned, but there's the one thing I know. I'm younger than you. Even Jesus would never forgive what you do. Let me ask you one question. Is your money that good? Will it buy you forgiveness? Do you think that it could? I think you will find, when your death takes its toll, all the money you...
Reality Radio for a Rational World. The Mike Malloy Show, only on Nova M Radio.
It's 22 past the hour. Regarding, what's his name? McCain. McCain's $300 million brain fart. George in Alhambra writes, Mike, can you imagine what the media would be doing if Obama came up with the $300 million prize, if it were his idea? Not only would the mainstream media play the video over and over until our brains exploded, we would hear the endless ranting about how foolish and naive Obama is and how ill-prepared he is for the presidency. McCain will walk away from this unscathed. No wonder Obama opted out of public financing. Yeah, that's very true. That's very true. And the president... of the Philippines, Gloria Macapagal Arroyo, is in D.C. today. And so they went to the, excuse me, to the White House for the photo op. You know, what Bush always does, shakes hands, leans over, shakes hands, turns around with that dung-eating grin of his and looks into the camera. You know, it could be Satan sitting there. It doesn't make any difference. You know, Bush, hey! Well, Bush met with Filipino President Gloria Macapagal Arroyo at the White House today. Arroyo was in Washington while her country is trying to recover from this typhoon that hit the coastal areas there and flipped the ferry that cost about 800 dead so far. Would you get on a ferry in Southeast Asia or India? Not me. Not under any conditions. I wouldn't even visit one if it was set up as a display in a desert. Anyway, before discussing aid for the Philippines, Bush began the sober meeting between Mrs. Arroyo and himself with a comment about a member of his kitchen staff who is, wait for it, Filipino. Bush. Madam President, it's a pleasure to welcome you back to the Oval Office. We have just had a very constructive dialogue. First, I want to tell you how proud I am to be the president of a nation in which there's a lot of Philippine Americans. They love America, and they love their heritage. And I reminded the president here that I am reminded of the great talent of the of our Philippine American, when I eat dinner at the White House. President Arroyo. Yes, Bush. And the chef is a great person and a really good cook, by the way, Madam President. Arroyo. Thank you. Oh, Christ. Please, God, make it stop. Please, God, make it stop. And, you know, when they start talking about colored people and stuff like that, and if I'm a racist, you know, I just point to Condoleezza Rice and Colin Powell. Jesus God. So he talks to the president of the Philippines about his Filipino cook. Oh, man.
Which world leader was it he was visiting and he called him a piece of work? And he said, you mind if I call you a piece of work? And
I said, I don't know. Probably someone with nuclear capabilities. So, you know, who knows?
Hey, it's a piece of work. Okay.
Oh, my God. The leader of the free world indicated today that he has no plans to interfere with these negotiations between Iraq and the Western oil giants to go into that sad, beat-to-hell country and start stealing the only thing they have, their oil. He's going to stay out of it, he says. Now, I know. Don't wet yourself. I understand. Some Democrats are concerned that the deal could inflame anti-U.S. sentiments, but you're way ahead of yourself, Democrats. First, let's go to Dana Perino, who said, quote, oh, there's music. Okay, we'll come back right after this break and tell you what Dana Perino said and some other stuff. You know, lots of stuff tonight. Stay with us. I'm Mike Molloy.
Breaks my heart for a song. And if ever I'm out on the prickly bush, I'm never getting it anymore. Oh, the prickly bush. Breaks my heart for a song. And if ever I'm out on the prickly bush, I'm never getting it anymore. Oh, the prickly bush. Breaks my heart for a song. And if ever I'm out on the prickly bush, I'm never getting it
anymore. Overseas, there's a lot going on. I believe our actions have helped make the world a more peaceful place.
Jesus, God. 25 before the hour. Anyway, Bush, or putting it in royal terms, the Bush administration has decided it has no plans to interfere with the rapacious move of Western oil companies to go into this utterly devastated country, Iraq, that now is being run by what most people see to be a puppet prime minister, but you never know. His biggest friends right now, the Iranians. But to effect the oil deal that was part of their constitution. Can you imagine that? An oil deal being part of a nation's constitution. It was not about the oil that all these Americans and all these Iraqis have died. No, not at all. Anyway, Dana Perino weighed in on this today. There's some Democrats in the Congress who said the deal could inflame anti-U.S. sentiments, as if that could be made any worse anywhere on earth than it is now. Well, I guess it could if we bombed central London. But since that's probably, and you notice the qualifier, not on the agenda, Dana Perino is insisting that things aren't that bad. Here's what she said. Iraq is a sovereign country, and it can make decisions based on how it feels that it wants to move forward in its development of its oil resources. But Dana, she goes on to say, quote, and if that means that our companies here in the United States can compete and win business, then that's for them and the Iraqis to decide. But I don't think the federal government of the United States needs to get involved. She said that. Dana, the federal government of the United States wrote the agreement to take Iraq's oil resources. What do you mean not get involved? And as far as our companies here in the U.S. can compete. No Dana, no Sweetie, is no competition. These are no bid contracts. Do you know what no bid means, Dana? No bid. B-I-D. No bid. You don't know what that means? Well, it's the opposite of compete. How's that? The Bush crime family's position on all this is diametrically opposed to the views of Chuck Schumer of New York and John Kerry of Massachusetts and Claire McCaskill of Missouri. These three senators warn that the deals could fan the perception that U.S. involvement in Iraq was motivated by oil. Dear, dear Senators Schumer, Kerry, and McCaskill, may we have a moment? May I talk to you? May we just sit down here and have a little mini Beat Jesus session, okay? The perception that the U.S. involvement in Iraq was motivated by oil, that perception, dear Senators, has been out there now for nigh on to 7 years. And it's not a perception. For 90% of the rest of the world, and probably 70% of the people of the United States, it is a fact. It is not a perception. Please, dear senators, I mean, you guys are Democrats. Oh, well, that explains it. In a letter Monday, these three senators asked Condoleezza Rice, the shoe lady, to take time out from her world retirement tour and try to block the oil deals. They're asking Condoleezza Rice, who had a goddamn tanker named after her, who was on the board. Was she on the board of ExxonMobil? Isn't that one of the companies that, and they're going to, dear Senators Schumer and Kerry and McCaskill, are you not aware of Condoleezza Rice's previous appointments and events in her life? She wasn't just, oh God. So they're asking Condoleezza Rice to try to block the deals. State Department spokesman Tom Casey said in a massive, almost bone-crushing understatement, it's unlikely that Secretary Rice will try to interfere. Unlikely. And then he added, the State Department spokesman, he said, quote, since the United States has had no involvement in this, I'm not sure on what basis the United States could block the Iraqi government from contracting in the way it sees fit, end quote. This is madness. This is crazy. He says the United States has no involvement in this. Son of a bitch. It's incredible, isn't it? We have no involvement in that. He says, I'm not sure on what basis the U.S. could block the Iraqi government from contracting in the way of season. Well, we could go in and tear up their constitution since we wrote it and tear up the part about you've got to give your oil resources away. We could do that. And Perino dismissed the three Democratic senators' concerns as illogical. Dana Perino is calling something illogical. She said, quote, I'm curious as to why the Democrats seem to, on the one hand, want Iraq to take over more control of their own country, but on the other hand, want to continue meddle in their business, end quote. Dana, we're meddling in their business every day. Dana, we have 150,000 U.S. military troops there and 160,000 independent contractors. Dana, we are meddling in their business. They don't fart unless they get our permission. Dana, please go away. I'm begging you, go away. You're not funny. You can't be parodied. You can't be. You are so goddamn insanely stupid, there is no way to parody you anymore. The United States has no involvement in this? The Iraqi oil deals will be announced by the end of this month. Oh, and this is interesting. I've been quoting from the AP version of the story. And The closing two sentences are these. Last week, Iraq's oil ministry declined to name the companies set to receive the deals. The New York Times, however, reported last Thursday that Shell, BP, ExxonMobil, and Total were in the final stages of negotiations on the no-bid contracts. Second to the last word in the entire article is no-bid. Now, don't you think that's the story, Associated Press? Wouldn't that be the story? Not what Dana Perino says. Dana Perino is a toad. Not what the spokesman for Condoleezza Rice, the shoe lady, says. He is a gopher. Not what the Democrats, Schumer and Kerry and McCaskill say. They are halfwits, morons, idiots, appeasers, codependents, enablers. The real story here, Associated Press, is your second to last word, no bid. Now, who made that decision? Did Iraq sit back and say, well, we're convinced, we don't need bids. Shell, BP, ExxonMobil, and Total. Total, I thought that was a goddamn breakfast cereal. Breakfast cereals are in the bidding here? What is that, Kellogg's? Or is it Post? Must be Kellogg. The Iraqi government says, oh, we're real happy with no bids. We'll just take anything. You know, we're just dumb Iraqis. We're just slightly less stupid than Iranians, who are slightly less stupid than Palestinians, who are slightly less stupid than, you know, right down the list there. We don't want any bids. We want it to go to the lowest bidder. That would be the only bidder. You know, and we picked the four, Shell, BP, ExxonMobil, and Total. We picked them. We picked them. We, the Iraqi government, picked them. We picked them. Nobody else. We did it. What makes you think anyone else did? Somebody told you someone else made the picking? No, we picked them. We picked ExxonMobil, Shell, BP, and Total. We did. We did. We don't need bids. What's a bid? We haven't heard bid since you guys showed up. What's a bid? This is what our people have died for, and this is what the United States has killed up to 1 million Iraqis for, so that these four oil companies... You don't believe that? Oh, for Christ's sake. This is what it's all about. This is what it was about. Remember all those people 7 years ago with the crudely lettered signs that said, no blood for oil? Remember that? Remember those signs? Everybody sat back in the media and said, oh, tisk, tisk, look here. Oh, God, some hippies in D.C. Oh, look, they're gathering for their parade. No blood for oil. Oh, my God, are these people misdirected? This is about freedom. This is about democracy. This is about being able to fly kites and play soccer. Ah, for Christ's sake, no blood for oil. Whose left-wing idea was that?
I'm afraid of America. I'm afraid of the world. I'm afraid I can't help it. I'm afraid I can't. I'm afraid of America.
Reality Radio for a Rational World. The Mike Malloy Show, only on Nova M Radio.
If that's what this is, and our target is a rational world, what the hell are we doing here? This is not Reality Radio for a Rational World. Who made that up? This is Fantasy Radio for a world gone nuts. Bob in Miami, Mike, stop it. Condoleezza Rice was never on the board of ExxonMobil. That's ridiculous. It was Chevron. Okay. Well, didn't Exxon Mobil name the tanker after, or was that Chevron? Not that it matters. Thanks, Bob.
I think it was Exxon because we joked about the Condoleezza Valdez.
Was that it? Okay. Irish Dave writes in, is the old coot, that would be McCain, really a socialist? 300 million tax dollars for a battery? What about the free market? I bet Exxon or BP, no wait, the Chinese. Yeah, that's the ticket. Irish Dave. Yeah, the old coot, a socialist? He likes contests. I know. He likes, you know, those do-it-yourself projects. It reminds me of Judy Garland movies and Andy Rooney from, like, what, the late 30s, early 40s? Hey, did you hear, Judy? Paul Whiteman's coming to town with his band. Really? Yeah, let's put on a dance, all right? And that way we can raise money for the widow Perkins. You know, they're about to take her house. No, really? Yeah, they're about to take her house. Well, I'll tell you what, we can use, we can use my dad's barn, and I can make the curtains. Oh, that's great, Judy, let's do it.
Mom will sew the curtains, and Dad will build the stage in the barn. Yeah, that's
wait,
it.
Wait, I just said that.
Sorry, I was trying to beat you to the punch. I didn't I quite know. Make it.
Maybe the old coot is a socialist. Maybe James Dobson has it right. Speaking of whom, speak of the devil, and he is a satanic little bastard, isn't he? Huh? We have some stuff about him coming up a little bit later in the program, what he said about Barack Obama. Oy. And here's the breaking news for you. ABC News has learned that Senator Barack Obama has asked his top contributors to help Senator Hillary Clinton retire her $10 million outstanding vendor debt. Well, that's interesting. Isn't it just today that the big dog said, yeah, well, I'm going to get out there on the trail and go to work for Hillary's opponent. What's his name? The colored fella. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to sound like Don Imus, don't I? No, I'm going to get out there and go to work for Barack Obama. I don't know what they want me to do, but you know, he's got some pretty good looking women working for him, doesn't he? Not that that means anything. I'm sorry, Hillary, I didn't. You know, whatever. We tried, baby girl. We sure did. But you know, it's time now to go to work for Barack. And, you know, they said I was the first black president. Guess what? They were wrong. Hey, have I told you about my heart surgery? Huh? Damn. I'll tell you, it was rough. And in a last-ditch attempt to fix a surveillance bill that is going to legalize Bush's warrantless wiretapping program and also legalize criminal acts by telecom companies, in a last-ditch attempt to stop it, Senator Russ Feingold and Senator Chris Dodd have promised they are going to filibuster the bill as long as it offers telecom companies retroactive immunity. Okay. There's the promise. As long as this bill offers telecommunications companies retroactive immunity, Dodd and Feingold are going to filibuster. The senators said in a joint statement today, quote, this is a deeply flawed bill, which does nothing more than offer retroactive immunity by another name. We strongly urge our colleagues to reject the so-called compromise legislation put together by that crazy, crazy bitch in the House. I just added that part. And oppose any efforts to consider this bill in its current form. We will oppose efforts to end debate on this bill as long as it provides retroactive immunity for the telecommunications companies that may have participated in the president's warrantless wiretapping program. Guys, may have participated? Why do you use those weasel words? You know goddamn good and well, both of you. You know this. Come on, Russ. Especially you. What do you mean, may have participated? Jesus, God, everybody on earth knows they participated. Why? Why do you have to use words like may have participated in the president warrantless wiretapping program? Oh, I'm sorry. I'm just going to hear a trigger mood tonight because I'm jacked up on Benadryl and my whole goddamn arm is about the size of my thigh. Have you seen this? Look in here, Kathy. Look at that. Huh? Whew. Where was I? The joint statement said, quote, if the Senate does proceed to this legislation, our immediate response will be to offer an amendment that strips the retroactive immunity provision out of the bill. Okay. You heard it here. And I got it from Raw Story. Feingold and Dodd promised to filibuster the bill as long as it offers telecom companies retroactive immunity. Now, you remember, Chris Dodd tried this back in February, and he got 29 supporters. He needed 41 to keep the bill from coming to a vote. And speaking in Washington yesterday, Russ Feingold was pessimistic about their chances this time around. You like this? You like this, truth seekers? 51 goddamn Democratic senators, and they can't even get 41 together? Feingold was on Amy Goodman's Democracy Now! Radio program today, and he reiterated his efforts. He said, quote, we're going to resist this bill. We're going to make sure that the procedural votes are gone through. In other words, a filibuster is requiring 60 votes to proceed to the bill, 60 votes to get cloture. We will also, Senator Dodd and I and others, will be taking some time to talk about this on the floor. We're just not going to let it be rubber stamped. And then Amy said specifically if he would filibuster, and Feingold said, quote, that's what I just described, end quote. We'll see. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy program on Nova M Radio. A couple of emails that wended their way here during the break. Thomas in Mountain Ranch, California, regarding the batteries. Mike, I seem to remember that the battery already has been developed, the one that John McCain wants to give a prize for. If I recall correctly, Thomas writes, this new battery was developed, but the patents were purchased by Chevron Texaco. Imagine that. My source is the movie Who Killed the Electric Car. Yeah, I seem to remember that, Tom. And P.S., the tanker was a Chevron tanker, if you care. Yeah, the Condoleezza Rice. Someone else sent me a picture of it. Huge sucker, huh? Condoleezza Rice. And Prairie 2 writes about Total Oil. I said the four companies in there, ExxonMobil, BP, Shell, I believe, and Total. Never heard of Total. Prairie 2 writes, Total Oil is a French company, fourth largest oil company in the world. It makes Exxon look good. It operates a national gas pipeline across Myanmar despite European Union sanctions, and it built the pipeline using slave labor. A company ethos the Bush crime family can aspire to. Yeah, you sure. Sure, why not? Yeah, Myanmar, huh? Yeah, that's how the military junta there remains the military junta and not just, you know, corpses lining the streets hanging from light fixtures, is the fact that they have all this money because of their oil, right? Is it their oil? It's not drugs, is it? That's Afghanistan. All right, Chris Dodd is on the floor of the Senate right now. You want to hear a filibuster in action? Listen, here's some filibuster. Go, Chris.
How one is characterized and where they sit on the political spectrum. This is an issue that goes to the heart of who we are. It's talking about the rule of law and the Constitution. And everyone here, we take an oath of office to protect and defend our country and to protect the Constitution. And certainly that's what this ought to involve. Are the courts going to make a determination about the legality of this effort? Again, I don't know of another instance in our nation's history where for 5 long years, 17 companies were allowed to virtually sweep up every phone call, every email, every fax, every text message that was sent by every citizen of this country. And that's exactly what happened, and would still be ongoing if it hadn't been revealed. Do we require that there be some justification as to whether or not this was legally occurring or not? That ought not to be a matter of political choice. That ought to be a matter for the courts. That's why we established the third branch of government, the judiciary, to determine the constitutionality and legality of actions taken by the executive or legislative branches. We are shortcutting in the legislative branch, at the request of the executive, the ability of that branch to make that determination. We're sanctioning, in effect. We're closing the door, never to know why this happened, who ordered it, why did they avoid FISA, what was behind their thinking. And that is a dangerous step for us to take. That's the only case I'm making here. I have my doubts, as I said, about the legality of it. But that's just one senator. I have the right to certainly have my doubts about certain actions. I don't have the right to determine the legality of it. I'm a United States senator. I'm not a federal judge. I don't sit in that third branch. I sit in the second branch. I sit in the Congress of the United States. And it's my job here to stand up and see to it that we don't take actions that would deprive that branch, the legal branch, the judicial branch, from asserting its rights under our Constitution, exactly what the founders intended. And so while I know there are those who are going to argue and make the case that those of us who stand up here to defend the rule of law, that somehow we're weak-kneed when it comes to terrorism, hardly the case. I don't want to give terrorists a greater victory. As profoundly sad, as tragic, and as violent as the attack was on 9/11, that destroyed so much and told us how dangerous the world is today, to grant them the power, those terrorists, to begin to deprive us of our liberties, is to grant them a victory even greater than they achieved that day. And it must be our common determination to see to it that we stand up and not allow these rights and these liberties that we enjoy as citizens to be eroded at our own hand. Let us say to terrorists around the world, we will fight you and defeat you as you try to do us and others great harm, but you will not bring down the pillars of our constitutional form of government and the rule of law. That is what this is all about. And to be argued and told that we have to do this, and if you don't,
wow,
do it,
I would just as soon sit here and listen to Chris Dodd. And as far as I can tell from looking at C-SPAN 2, he is speaking extemporaneously. He is not reading from a teleprompter. It's okay if you want to go watch some of that. Go ahead. You know, just leave us on in the background. But this is, I guess this is the opening salvo of the filibuster. Dodd and Feingold have vowed to maintain until retroactive immunity for their criminal actions of these 17 telecom companies, according to Dodd, until that's removed from the bill, among other things. This is astonishing. Did you ever think you would live, I know I didn't, live to see a day when it would take a filibuster to protect the Fourth Amendment, illegal search and seizure? And by the way, the Fourth Amendment is the amendment on which Roe v. Wade ruling is based. A person's right to privacy. In this particular instance, Roe v. Wade, a woman's right to privacy. So you can you connect the dots very quickly? Yeah, me too. By eroding the Fourth Amendment, it sets up the perfect storm to do away with Roe v. Wade. Now, you may have mixed feelings about Roe v. Wade. I happen to be anti-abortion, but I'm a male, so it is not my issue. It is not something that I feel I have the prerogative of judging. It is a woman's right to the privacy of her own body. God, what a radical point of view. A woman's right to the privacy of her own body. vis-a-vis decisions made by her, her physician. If possible, her partner who got her pregnant, or assisted in her pregnancy, I should say, and whatever her concept of right and wrong, justice, morality, whatever, those things do come into play on some level. But the Fourth Amendment is the one out of which came the whole idea back in the 70s that there was an inherent right to privacy where it concerned a woman obtaining a legal, safe abortion. So the assault here by the right-wing crazies in this country is not just about tapping your phone. It's also about tapping your fallopian tubes eventually. Do you understand that? Do you understand that? Now, if you're male, hello, you don't have fallopian tubes. So, but for women who have gotten used to, although the struggle is ongoing, the sovereignty of their own bodies and the right that they can make decisions based on what they want, what they consider to be right and proper, along with the input and advice and expertise of their physician. Who says government has a right in that? Oh, that's right. The Republican Party says it does. But the FISA Act, which effectively will gut and destroy the Fourth Amendment, also will gut and destroy the very amendment that guarantees the right to privacy for a woman. Just remember that, all right? You probably already knew that, didn't you? What else we got here? Oh, yeah, a couple more things. Then we're going to go to your phone calls. First, we're going to take a break. We have a break right here. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.
Come inside, come inside. There behind the glass stands a real blade of grass. Be careful as you pass. Move along, move along. Come inside.
In my line of work, you got to keep repeating things over and over and over again for the truth to sink in, to kind of catapult the propaganda.
Twenty-one past the hour. I want to drop this in the mix too. This is reported by Natural News. David Gutierrez wrote this. The U.S. military is demanding bonus money back from soldiers who had their arms and legs blown off in Iraq or Afghanistan. This is true in some cases. The military has been denying wounded soldiers the full amount of their enlistment bonuses. And what's the rationale? Well, the rationale is that the soldiers are unable to fulfill the term of their service contract. Huh? How about that? This came to light after a soldier, Jordan Fox, was injured by a roadside bomb in Iraq and sent home 3 months early. He received a letter asking him to repay $2,800 of his signing bonus. Jordan Fox had been hospitalized for several months and was still has an injured back and a blind eye. Fox said, quote, "I was just completely shocked. I couldn't believe I'd gotten a bill in the mail from the Army." Now, one of the tricks that they use, of course, if you sign up for military service, a troop may receive up to $30,000 in signing bonuses. These bonuses are contingent upon fulfilling a specified term of service, obviously. It's like any bonus, the only it's like a prize. It's like John McCain. It's, I don't know what the hell it is, but $30,000. There's something about that that stinks, isn't there? I don't know. Here, come here, poor unemployed white guy or black guy or Latino guy. Come here. Psst, come here. Look in here. Come on in the tent. Look in here. Look at this. Look. See what that is? That's a check for 30 grand. Huh? That's more than you and your father and your uncles make in a year. It's yours. What I have to do for it? Go kill. Kill people. Blow stuff up. Well, I want to be a motorcycle mechanic. Well, yeah. That too. Uh-huh. But there's also the blowing up and the killing. 30 grand. Where do I sign? According to CBS affiliate KDKA in Pittsburgh, the military has asked, quote, thousands, end quote, of injured troops to return part of their bonuses. KDKA, after filing the report on their television station, said a military spokesman replied that the bill sent to Mr. Fox was a mistake. Brigadier General Mike Tucker told KDKA, quote, if you are ill or injured while on duty, the Army will not ask you to repay any portion of your recruitment bonus, end quote. But the military has refused to comment, according to KDKA, on charges that thousands of soldiers have received letters similar to Fox's. In addition, the military has only specified that wounded soldiers will not be asked to repay any of their bonuses. It has not promised to pay full bonuses to injured soldiers in cases where the bonus was not paid up front. Psst, come here.
What?
Come in the tent. Look.
What's that?
That's a check for 30 grand.
What do I have to do to get it? Kill somebody?
Yes. Representative Jason Altmaier of Pennsylvania said, quote, I am disappointed that the policy does not go further by stating that wounded soldiers also will receive the remaining balance of future bonus payments. It is preposterous for our government to have a policy that says that a soldier who has sustained serious injuries in the field of battle has not fulfilled his or her service obligation, end quote. Representative Altmaier, it is not the government saying that. It is Dick Cheney. It was Donald Rumsfeld. And it is the Bush bastard. Three huge, smelly cowards. Now, the irony here, and it's not irony. There's no long, irony's long dead. I don't know why I keep using the word where it concerns anything that the Bush crime family does. Nothing's irony or ironical. The situation here is that what was the situation? the irony, I guess I was going to, the situation is that, oh, that's right, Republican office holders will say, in response to this, there's no quote here, but they'll say, well, we're trying to get fiscal responsibility. We always take care of our soldiers. Don't worry about that, Mr. Democrat nosy ass. We take care of our soldiers. We are the Republican Party. We are the party of manhood and standing up and Viagra and killing things and people and blowing stuff up. So, you know, John McCain, hallelujah, that's who we are. So sit down, Mr. Limp-wristed, candy-ass Democrat. You don't know nothing. And Barack Obama, give me a break. The guy, I've got food in my refrigerator older than he is. Go away with your Barack Obama. See, this is what the Republicans do. Give us your young people. We're going to send them into the meat machine. We're going to send them into the sausage maker. And we're going to promise them bonuses. Are we going to give them to them? Why, hell no.
To say it clear, to say it cool, it's over, it ain't going any further. And now the wheels of heaven stop, you feel the devil's riding crop. Get ready for the future, it is murder.
time to snuggle up with your favorite screamer. More Mike Malloy.
Welcome back. It is 25 before the hour. I just absolutely get to the point of a major, complete, total tear down, freak out when I hear these stories like the military demands bonus money back from soldiers who had arms or legs blown off or half their skull and pieces of their brain shot away. How does that happen? I understand how it happens. This is the Republican. This is the Republican Party's way of showing its loyalty to the troops. They don't care. I don't know why people in this country still think that Republicans care about the military. How can those of you who think that be so stupid in light of the facts over and over and over and over again? How do you do that? I'm always intrigued with the ability to deny reality. Now, I understand denial is a great ego defense mechanism, and when applied properly, it staves off panic and despair and so on and so forth. But how do you Republicans do this denial thing? Or do you actually believe that what you're doing and supporting with your members of Congress is a good thing for the soldiers? Going back to the war, remember 1,000 years ago when this occupation of Iraq began? Soldiers who were writing home asking their parents, for Christ's sake, to go to an army surplus store and buy them Kevlar vests so they wouldn't have chunks of their rib cage and their lungs blown away. Remember that? And the Humvees that had no Under Armour, so that people driving, American soldiers participating in the occupation, driving over an IED would have their legs blown off. And did Rumsfeld fix it? No. If you had been Secretary of Defense, Truth Seeker, wouldn't you have said, okay, stop the war, stop the occupation, everybody fall back to Kuwait where it's safe. Okay, now we're going to not move another goddamn troop over this line until we can at least protect them. Then we'll get on with the business of oil imperialism. But until our troops are protected, no oil imperialism. How long do you think it would have taken ExxonMobil to dip into their billions upon billions of dollars of profit to provide the Under Armour for the Humvees and the Kevlar vest for the soldiers? How long? 10 minutes? Long enough to pack a crate and deliver it to UPS and say, let's see, 123 Alid Street in Kuwait City. We got troops over there waiting for the delivery. Republicans hate your son, Mr. and Mrs. America, Republican. They hate him. They hate your daughter. They hate your husband. Anyone who's in a military uniform, Republicans hate. They pee on them. They just urinate contempt all over the military. It's the Democrats. The Democrats in Congress who make a half-hearted effort, but they make the effort because you know why? Because it's the Democrats in Congress who have actually served in the military. But you crazy red staters, you're just going to continue to provide your sons and daughters and fathers and moms and uncles to this meat machine, aren't you? Remember that song when you were a kid? O Dunderman, how could you be so mean to ever have invented the sausage meat machine? That's what the Republicans have set up. A sausage meat machine for our troops. And the Iraqis? Oh, Jesus, the poor Iraqis. The utter, absolute, soul-crushing misfortune of having their country sit over vast pools of easy-to-get-to oil. The U.S. military demands bonus money back from soldiers with arms and legs blown off. Hell of a headline, huh? Hell of a headline. James Dobson, the psychopathic, child-molesting, fake Christian leader. Child-molesting in the sense that I don't mean physical molestation, much worse, much worse. Psychological molestation, emotional molestation. He convinces little children that if they don't do it, he says, they will burn in hell. Burn. And if their mommies and daddies don't do what he says, mommy and daddy will burn in hell. If that's not child molestation, child abuse, what is it? Dobson accuses Barack Obama of distorting the Bible and pushing what Dobson calls a fruitcake interpretation of the Constitution. I wonder what that means. What is a fruitcake interpretation of the Constitution? On today's Focus on the Family radio program, this kind of filthy, stinking criticism comes shortly after an aide to Barack Obama suggested a meeting between the Obama campaign and this filthy pig Dobson at the Pigs Organization headquarters. That's according to the Senior Vice President for Government and Public Policy at Focus on the Family. Now, I didn't listen to Dobson. The Associated Press got an advanced copy of the pre-taped radio segment, which runs about 18 minutes, and focuses on excerpts of a speech Obama gave in June of 2006 to the liberal Christian group Call to Renewal. And Obama mentions Dobson in his speech. This is what Obama said, quote, "Even if we did have only Christians in our midst, if we expelled every non-Christian from the United States of America, whose Christianity would we teach in the schools? Would we go with James Dobson's or Al Sharpton's?" Well, that just raised the short hairs in Dobson's crotch almost to the point where he couldn't sit down. So he took aim at examples that Obama cited in asking which biblical passages should guide public policy. There's a heretical question. Chapters perhaps like Leviticus, which suggests slavery is okay and that eating shellfish is an abomination before God. You want to go with that? Or how about Jesus, the Sermon on the Mount? What Obama called, quote, "a passage that is so radical that it's doubtful that our own Defense Department would survive its application," end quote. And then Obama said, quote, "folks haven't been reading their Bibles," end quote. Well, that's right, Barack. People don't read anymore. A.B., the Christian right psychopaths have jerked every single so-called evangelical Christian around the neck, pulled them their faces close and said, "Don't read the Bible. Read the parts I tell you, or you will burn in hell forever. And so will your mom and daddy." So, Dobson accused Obama of wrongly equating Old Testament texts and dietary codes that no longer apply to Jesus' teachings in the New Testament. Hold on just a minute here, Dobson. Isn't the Bible inerrant? Isn't that what you religious, suicidal psychopaths teach? That the Bible is inerrant, it is the Word of God. What are you talking about? You're canceling Old Testament texts? That was God talking! But Dobson can do that because he's Dobson. God is wrong. Right? Jimmy boy, God is wrong. Go ahead and eat the goddamn shellfish. What's wrong with you? That's desert tribal nonsense. Really? Then why is it in the Bible? The Bible is inerrant. You know that part, Leviticus, about a man shall not lie with a man? Is that in Leviticus? Where is that? Someone should have told King David about that. So Dobson said regarding Barack Obama, quote, I think he's deliberately distorting the traditional understanding of the Bible to fit his own worldview, his own confused theology, end quote. Quote, he is dragging biblical understanding through the gutter, end quote. What? No, he's not, Jimmy boy. You are, you psychopath. And you're going to stand there and tell God he's wrong? Hey, God! Your dietary laws are a bunch of hokum.
I'm thinking I'm getting away. Boy, you don't love God.
If you don't love your neighbor, if you gossip about him, if you never have mercy, if he gets into trouble, and you don't try to help him, then you don't love your neighbor.
Then you don't love God.
I would never use God to promote foreign policy decisions.
Except when he talks to you and tells you to invade countries, right? Anyway, James Dobson, a religious nutball, if ever one existed, is trying to make up his mind whether or not to meet with Barack Obama. Barack Obama, his campaign, suggestion, which, you know, I don't understand. This is one of the reasons, I guess, I always admire the peacemakers. I like to think, oh, Mike, you're a peacemaker. You're not a warmonger. No, that's not really true. I have a hard time with the turn the other cheek thing. You know, if somebody challenges me to a knife fight, I like to show up with hand grenades, rifles, guns, brass knuckles, and some dynamite. And that's because I'm not a very evolved soul, according to some of my friends who think that way. And that's fine. I mean, you know, people can think what they want, not because I grant it, but because that's just the way it is. But for Barack Obama to approach these psychopaths, what does he hope to gain? Is he going to put some kind of mojo on Dobson? Dobson has all the mojo in the world because he, you know, he can correct God. He can rewrite the holy texts in Leviticus. Dobson can. He can declare them inoperative. God says don't eat shellfish, and Dobson says, pish tush, what are you talking about? Forget that. Joshua Du Bois, director of religious affairs for Obama's campaign, oh God, said in a statement that a full reading of Obama's speech shows he is committed to reaching out to people of faith and standing up for families. Du Bois said, quote, Obama is proud to have the support of millions of Americans of faith and looks forward to working across religious lines to bring our country together, end quote. Gag me with a scepter. Why talk like that? Why not just say, Dobson is a crazy son of a bitch. We want nothing to do with him. Oh, I know why. Now, Dobson reserves some of his harshest criticism for Barack Obama's argument that the religiously motivated must frame debates over issues like abortion, not just in terms of their own religion, but in arguments accessible to all people. Oh, my God. Logic? What? In a discussion of abortion events, a woman's right to privacy, and religious nutballs, Obama is trying to inject reason? Ah! Upon hearing that, Dobson said that Obama, who supports a woman's right to privacy, is trying to govern by the, Dobson's words, lowest common denominator of morality, a fruitcake interpretation of the Constitution. Fruitcake? I don't quite get that. Is that a queer thing? Are you doing a double slam there, a triple slam there, Dobby? Are you going after the queers and the Democratic presidential nominee, presumptive, and all this other stuff? Did you slip in a queer slam there? Did you? I'm going to check with some of my queer friends, Dobby, and see if you slipped in a queer slam there, you little sweetheart. Huh? Oh, God. So there's Dobson accusing Barack Obama of distorting the Bible. And in the process of accusing him, he states that God is no longer serious about eating shellfish. That was a Jew thing, right, Dobson? You know, if they didn't do so much damage, I would find some of these religious freaks just amazingly funny and entertaining. If Dobson declares that God had it wrong about shellfish, why not wrong about gay folk? Of course, Jesus doesn't mention gay folk, and you know why? Think about it. 13 single men dressed in robes wandering around the Middle East. Huh? How many of them do you think were gay? 3? Which ones? Andrew. We know Andrew was gay. Judas was gay. Kissing Jesus. Oh, please! Mwah. Who else? James? Was James gay? So there's Dobson accusing Barack Obama of a fruitcake interpretation of the Constitution and distorting the Bible. That pretty much covers just about every conceivable kind of criticism of someone's morality and devotion to country that you could possibly come up with. He has a fruitcake interpretation of the Constitution, and he distorts the Bible. That doesn't leave much, does it? Oh. And he chews Nicorette gum. That's right. That was the third thing. That Nicorette gum thing. Our military affairs correspondent, Sharon, emails in regarding the bonuses paid to the service members and the attempt to take them back. Sharon writes, I'd like to think that I would tell the Army to come get their bonus if they wanted it back, but that I couldn't guarantee the safety of anyone they might send. Why are they always nickel and diming the soldiers for relatively small amounts of money while they let Kellogg, Brown and Root and Blackwater overbill us for billions? This has Cheney and Rumsfeld's fingerprints all over it. Remember, Sharon writes, when they had wounded soldiers paying for their meals in the hospital? Yes, I do. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
music to the story in your eyes. It's been shining down upon me now.
Welcome back, about 7 past the hour. This is Nova M Radio. My name is Mike Malloy. All right, one more email here, then we're going to go to your phone calls. The number is 800-989-1480, 989-1480. This is from Prairie 2, who writes, Dow Chemical, one of the world's largest companies, just announced another price increase of 25% on top of the 20% increase they took 3 weeks ago. For the math challenged, it really is a 30% increase compared to prices last month, or 50% total increase. Plus, they will add a $300 surcharge per truckload and $600 per train car. Dow Chemical is also dramatically cutting back production. Those jobs Chucklenuts and Grandpa McCain have been promising us are gone. Unless you see your future as being in charge of the line that hands out bread and soup. Waves of layoffs are rippling through the economy, and the waves get higher with every pass as more businesses close. Credit card companies are quietly cutting customers' credit lines, anticipating that people will be forced to live on them. The only way to fix this is with a massive increase in wages, but even the Democrats aren't interested in doing that. They've been told so many times that wage inflation is bad that they believe it. Of course, they raise their own wages every year without fail. Yeah, wage inflation. What a term, huh? Wage inflation. Yeah, okay. All right. To your phone calls, starting with Andrew, who's calling from Milwaukee, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Andrew.
Hey, always a pleasure to talk to you there, Mike. Hey, first thing, you know, you could have used a different example other than using Andrew as a homosexual. I just want you to know that, our fan there. Hey, well, but, you know.
Not that there's anything wrong with that, Andrew. Come on, you know.
Hey. But, you know, it. You know, I have to disagree with you on one simple thing.
Yeah.
You know, you're saying about the Republicans, you know, doing this and that. But then, you know, my question is, what are these Democrats doing? We have our constitutional rights being revoked and, you know, reneged upon and everything else. But no one's stopping them.
Right.
Okay. I just want to throw that one out there. But as far as this oil thing is concerned, you know, why is it that everyone's attention is being diverted from us going over there to Iraq, you know, as opposed to, you know, this drilling and stuff? I think that's just a distraction. And no one is really hitting that issue except for you.
No, I mean, that's ridiculous. Wait, what's the distraction, Andrew? I'm sorry, I missed that.
As far as the drilling is concerned, granted, the drilling is important. But I think that's just, it's more like, you know, divert our attention,
mm-hmm.
you know, instead of what's really at hand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean,
this administration is known for that. Causing us to look here while they're over there stealing everything they can get their damn hands on.
Yeah, sleight of hand, right?
Sure, absolutely.
All right, man. Thanks for taking my call.
All right, Andrew. Thank you. I appreciate it. David is calling from Blaine, Washington, listening on the Internet. Hey, David.
Hey, Mike.
Hey.
Hey, thanks for bringing up all the topics. My blood's boiling, of course, for the last 7 years, and I was going to ask you to to borrow your ice picks again, but I'll refrain.
Okay, that's good. That's good.
You know, the McCain campaign and Charlie Black wants to play their little phony war on terrorism card.
Right.
You know, it reminds me of their phony color-coded terror alerts that they would play every, you know, in 2002, 2004, 2006.
Mm-hmm.
But for them to invoke the assassination of Benazir Bhutto in Pakistan in last December, it was just a few months ago.
Yeah.
And a month and a half before she was offed, assassinated, she named the guy that's been threatening her life, Omar Sheikh. It's on this BBC World interview in November.
Mm-hmm.
I hope somebody could Google it and put it up on Democratic Underground or where, on Mike Malloy's website or whatever, just so the information gets out there, because she named him and also claimed that this Omar Sheikh character took out Osama bin Laden as well. And then voila, she gets killed.
Isn't that interesting?
Isn't that interesting?
We played that. That was from a David Frost interview on the BBC. And we played the entire soundbite several months ago.
Yep.
And, yeah, Benazir Bhutto. Now the response from a lot of people were, well, she misspoke. She didn't really mean Osama bin Laden. She this, she that,
yeah,
she
right.
this, she that. It's amazing when we create, just like George Orwell created Goldstein, who was the enemy of Big Brother. When we create a Goldstein, in this case it's Osama bin Laden, he is invested, or these characters are invested with so much power, it's almost supernatural. So that when someone like Benazir Bhutto claims that he is dead, it's like saying, Professor Altizer saying God is dead, or Nietzsche, or whoever, saying God is dead.
Well,
there's too much invested in this booger man, so he can't be dead. He
absolutely.
He is omnipotent. He is all powerful. He is the central organizing principle of American self-governance now is the booger man!
And the money that it takes to all the missing trillions from the Pentagon, the missing billions from this Iraq
right.
Atrocity that's happening in our name right now, to fund these talking heads on the radio and on the TV all over the planet, you know, and Benazir Bhutto just peeled off just a smidge of a veneer of this
mm-hmm.
cover up,
mm-hmm.
you know, that and using of terrorism and this Osama bin Laden thing and inflaming the Muslim world as a result of. Through Karl Rove and the Bushman and Dick Cheney's transparent little tactics, which aren't going to work in the end.
Didn't take long. You know, it's my understanding from various reports that it was the Bush crime family that convinced Benazir Bhutto to return to Pakistan.
That's right.
That the Pakistani people needed her leadership desperately. Of course, let's keep in mind that Benazir Bhutto and her entire family were found guilty of corruption the last time the family ran Pakistan, and that's one of the reasons she left. But she was talked into returning, one can surmise, by the Bush crime family in order to put her in a place where she could be effectively assassinated. They tried shortly after she got there, remember, with the explosion?
Yep.
Oops, missed. So they waited and tried again. Oops, got her. So to me the fingerprints of the CIA or the NSA or whoever the hell it is all over her murder.
All of them.
And there's no way to deny that, but I hear you loud and clear. David, thanks, man. I appreciate your call. One thing the Charlie Black quote may have done, and somebody sent me this, it's not my certainly not my point of view until I read it. Now it's become my point of view. I mean, I didn't come up with this. But that Charlie Black may have guaranteed the political death of John McCain and may certainly have guaranteed that the Bush crime family will not allow or cause another 9/11 attack on this country, as a lot of us have been kind of anticipating. Why? Because if they cause it or allow it, after John McCain's campaign manager, whatever the hell Charlie Black was, saying that it would help John McCain, such an attack. Imagine, I would find it difficult to believe if that scenario were to occur, that John McCain would get more than maybe 350 votes, period. So maybe at some point we should all raise a glass to Charlie Black, because in shooting off his mouth, along the lines of what Republicans are used to doing now since 2001, and that is the fear card, constantly the fear card. You know, vote for a Democrat and Al-Qaeda are going to just be celebratory to the point where they will immediately launch nuclear-tipped missiles on the United States from Canada, Cuba, Mexico, Wyoming, and offshore submarines if you vote Democratic. If you vote Republican, all of the Al-Qaeda terrorist booger men will run screaming and shrieking and wetting themselves into the mountains of the Pakistan-Afghanistan border, right? So Charlie Black opened his mouth, stuck in his foot, and in the process may have prevented the Bush crime family from engineering another attack on this country. That's why Charlie Black is chagrined and upset.
Oh,
to bed angry. Let Mike Malloy do it for you on Nova M Radio.
It is 21 past the hour. Back to your phone calls. Tim is calling from Pittsburgh, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Tim.
Hi.
Hi, Tim.
Hi, Mike. I just call a couple things I'd like to say. One, that quote that Thomas Jefferson said, that any time you give liberty up in the name of freedom, you don't deserve either one.
Yeah.
And also, I worked twice in Iraq as a contractor. I drove convoy over there, hauled jet fuel all over the country.
Really?
Yes, and I like to tell anybody, you know, anybody really thinks it has to do with terrorism, fooling themselves. It's all about money. It has been since it began. Halliburton or KBR, who I work for, constantly getting fined for overcharging, and they keep the contract and just keep breaking the money in.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and it's going to go on. And I talked to quite a few of the troops when I was over there, and publicly, as far as on TV, they would say, oh, they're all behind the president. But when you get them on the side, they don't agree with them. They don't agree how they got there. They say they're there because it's their duty, but they don't like how they got there. They think they were lied to, and they want to come home.
What did you do there when you were there, Tim?
Yeah, I was a convoy driver. I drove trucks, hauled jet fuel.
That's pretty dangerous, wasn't it?
Yeah, I got blown up 2 different times.
You're kidding.
Yeah, one time I didn't get hurt. Second time I hurt my knee.
Hurt your knee, and that's it.
Yeah, but we're not allowed, no weapons or anything. We have escorts, National Guard or reservist escorts, but they've had problems sometimes where they disappear when the trouble starts. But the second night I got hit, most convoys have 30, 32 trucks, 3 Americans, and most of the rest of them are either Indian or Pakistani drivers. And the night we got hit, I got hit, and I lost 2 of my Pakistani drivers that night too.
Wow!
So how
long have you been back? From
5 months now. They call me every week wanting me to go back a third time, but I figured the first time I didn't get hurt, second time I got hurt, third time it might kill me, you know.
Yeah, I would. Let me ask you: was the pay that you got for being a convoy driver, was it equal to the amount of risk? Do you think that's A. B. Why would you take a job with that high risk, halfway around? Well, not halfway around the world, but so far away.
Well, yeah, the first year I made about $97,000, and every 4 months you work 7 days a week, and every 4 months you get 2 weeks paid vacation anywhere you want to go in the world. The second time I was a convoy commander, I put in almost $150,000, but I was working 125 hours a week. They work you to death, you know. The base pay isn't really that great, but then they give you a hazardous duty and foreign service pay, and that helps bring it up, but now, the third world people, such as the Pakistani and the Indian drivers, they pay them quite a bit less, only about $1,500 a month. But that's still a lot for them from their country, which I still don't agree with. I'm a frame of mind. If a man's doing the same job as I am, no matter where he's from, he should be paid the same. But they see it differently. And well, I can give you, for instance, how they're ripping the government off. The first time I got blown up, my truck lost the hood and radiator. It was a $6,000 repair. They billed the government for $30,000.
Well, that's not surprising. But what made you take a job in Iraq? Was there not a job here for you?
Oh, yeah. I was working on the same people I'm working for now. I'm driving right now. I'm on my way to Reno. My kids are grown. I'm divorced. I was bored, and in a way, you know, I was in Vietnam, and in a way, in my mind, I thought in my way it was supporting the troops, whether I agreed with the war or not.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I was naive the first time I went over. I really thought it was terrorism and stuff, but after being there and seeing what goes on and everything, I come to realize it's a big lie. It's nothing about just about money. There's a lot of people getting rich. And, well, you know, and I think that's why, like Halliburton, they're closing the world headquarters in Houston and moving it all to Dubai, because I think they know they're going to get indicted over this sooner or later, and they want to get away from U.S. courts.
Do you still have friends there?
Oh, yeah. There's a few guys I email every week. I've known those guys have been over there 4 years working, and lots of them are married, lots of them are single. For a good while, if you got hurt, they told you you couldn't get no compensation because you wasn't working for a U.S. company. Because even though you get hired by KBR, you work for a subsidiary there's out of Dubai, SEII.
Oh, my God.
And your pay comes from Dubai. So when you get hurt, they say, well, you're not eligible for workman's comp or anything.
Oh, Jesus. Hey, listen, Tim, this is very interesting. Thank you. I appreciate the story you just told us. Thanks a lot, okay?
Okay, guys.
Let's talk again. And
I've been holding about an hour and a half.
I know you were. And I hate to say this since you're back in the States, but drive safely, okay?
America loses.
Oh, that's nice. That's lovely. That's the Democrat approach. The terrorists win and America loses. That's good, George. That's real good, you son of a bitch. That's really good. The terrorists win. Democrats, Jesus. I get emails every once in a while and people say, well, what are you going to do when Bush is gone? Rejoice. That will be the first order of the day. Come inauguration day, this coming January. I don't care if a three-headed goat takes the oath of office. The relief that will flood not just this country, but the whole world. I don't know how long it's going to last. Will it be short-lived? You know, will Barack Obama turn out to be something other than what he appears to be on the surface? Who knows? But there will be that brief moment at the swearing-in, not after the election in November, but at the swearing-in. I think from the election to the swearing-in, there's going to be a collective breath-holding in this country. Oh, Jesus, what's going to happen now? But once Obama is sworn in as president of the United States, there will be one brief moment where I'm going to feel like a tired cliche coming. I'm going to feel like an enormous weight has been lifted off of me. And I'm sure the rest of the world outside of our borders is going to feel damn near the same, at least in those countries where U.S. foreign policy is, if not critical, at least a factor in either how they govern themselves or how they protect their assets, right? And then if Barack's promises turn out to be smoke, if his rhetoric turns out to be only rhetoric, then that brief moment will kind of dissipate, right? Back to your phone calls. Ben is calling from Madison, listening on the mic. Hey, Ben.
Hi, Mike. Calling about the wiretap bill.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
I think it's important for us to fight this, even if we lose, to set the stage for privacy battles in the next Congress. And I want to point out an opportunity next week. All these senators, if Russ and Chris are able to hold it up that long, even if it's already over by then, will be returning to their districts and making 4th of July parades and picnics. My suggestion is to pick up big old reel-to-reel tapes as a visual prop. It's even a bigger prop if it starts to unravel while you're waving your arms. And give them a piece of our mind.
That's a good idea. Let me ask you something. From what I could gather from news reports, Dodd and Feingold, their filibuster is going to last, according to Feingold, as long as the telecoms have immunity from prosecution in that bill. Supposing the Republicans take that out, are Feingold and Dodd then saying that they will accept the continuation of the spying? Because the only thing that
not in the statement that Russ put out this morning.
Really?
Yeah, he focused not on the immunity, but rather on the legalization of spying going forward.
Well, that's good to know, because I didn't see that part. What I saw was the statement that he and Dodd would continue as long as telecom retroactive immunity was included in the bill, which led me to believe that once that's taken out, they won't filibuster any longer. So I'm glad
I don't know if it'll be technically a filibuster. I know that that Russ has a series of amendments on the other issues.
Mm-hmm. Well, like I say, it's good to know that
he hasn't ever actually used the word filibuster. The closest he came, was saying that he would do I cornered him at the state Democratic convention a week and a half ago, and the language he used there was that he was going to use every means possible to derail it.
Well, on Democracy Now!, Amy Goodman's program, a short transcript from which I read earlier in the evening. He described what he and Chris Dowd were going to do, and Amy Goodman said,
she asked if that, does that mean you're going to filibuster it? And he said, right. We're going to do everything possible.
He said that's what, I think he said more like, that's what I just described or whatever. I hate playing cat and mouse with language. I just wish that, this is the thing that irritates me about all Democrats, even ones that for the most part are right on the issues like Feingold, is that in so many instances, instead of just stating categorically, this is the way it is, or this is what I believe, or this is why I condemn that particular action, or this is why I support that one, I hear weasel words. I'm sorry, but even from Feingold, I hear these weasel words, and not that I, think poorly of Feingold, I don't, but I hate those weasel words. Well, we'll see, won't we?
Well, I think the real linguistic mistake with this was calling it the FISA bill in the first place, when in fact the suits are under the Wiretap Act, which has an exemption for FISA wiretaps.
Well, who cares about details? This is,
except that had we been fighting it as the Wiretap Act from the beginning, people would have a much clearer understanding what we were talking about. Nobody read the FISA law except you and me.
Sure, that's very true. That's a perfect example of weasel words. Thanks, Ben. Greg is calling from Phoenix, listening on KPHX. Hey, Greg.
Hey, Mike. How you doing tonight?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Good. Yeah, you sound good. You sound good. I just want to share a couple of things. Boy, it was really interesting hearing that guy Tim, the truck driver. That was really nothing quite like hearing firsthand experience. Anyway, I called to just talk. I had a couple of thoughts on some books I'm reading. I'm reading in the spirit of Know Thy Enemy. I picked up Paul Alexander's biography on McCain.
Uh-huh.
And I'm sure you probably know a lot about the guy, but I'm just kind of baffled by this flip flop from Bill Clinton is a horrible guy because he cheated on his wife, right? And then apparently it's common knowledge that McCain cheated on his first wife and married six weeks later. And
yeah, but you know this, Greg. Republican hypocrisy is boundless.
Yeah.
Newt Gingrich, who was one of the managers of the impeachment effort against Bill Clinton, back in the late 90s, everyone knew, or I don't know if everyone knew, but it was common knowledge, that Gingrich was boinking one of his staff people who worked on the an agricultural subcommittee. He's now married her, but at the time he was married to his second or third wife. He hadn't left her yet. He hadn't given her the bad news. And not only was he boinking this young woman who was a staffer, a volunteer staffer, an intern, but he was also, Gingrich has a reputation in D.C., and I know about this because he's from Georgia, and at one time he represented the county right next to the county that I live in. And I came to know him, not, hi, Newt, hi, Mike, nothing like that, but I mean just from being around the events that he went to here in Georgia, and from knowing people who knew him fairly intimately. He's a lying son of a bitch, not only that, but he's always cheated. He's always been cheated on his wife, made life miserable. When his wife had cancer surgery, he went to her her hospital room and informed her that he was filing a petition to get custody of their children or to reduce. Oh, yeah. He's just a scummy, filthy human being. Yeah. And to criticize for Newt Gingrich to criticize or condemn anyone for any activity is the height of irony or parody or whatever you want to call it, because he is such a foul, evil, disgusting human being. He really is. But this is the way most Republican lawmakers are.
It seems that way. Hey, Cash, one other thing. I'm rereading Zinn's People's History, too, and I'm just wondering if you think I'll leave it with this about with the gas prices and the war, does anybody talk anymore about general strikes? I mean, I know there used to be things called general strikes where people would just
sit down,
not go to work, and
we don't do that here. Apparently, they do it in Italy, they do it in France, they do it sometimes in the UK, they do it in Germany, they do it in various countries in Africa. But here, nah.
Seems like now that we have the internet, it'd be so much easier to organize, to get the reasons out and get people motivated. But anyway, well, it's good to talk to you, Mike. I've been a fan for a long time. I appreciate you taking my call, and you hang in there.
All right, Greg. Thanks a lot. Take care. We don't do general strikes. We don't do sit-downs. I don't know why. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Are you perfectly comfortable going to war without moral sanction against the law? Are you perfectly comfortable fighting the world? If you're perfectly comfortable with all that's been done, gaze at your daughters and gaze at your sons. Ask yourself this question over again.
This is my private life. I've got no friends to fear. I've got no problems, no cross to bear. If you can find me, come get me out of here. This is my private place. Everything is neat and clean. The skeletons are hidden in the closet. This is my private place. Can you get me out of here?
It's about 10 before the hour. Thanks to the crew, Ian Huff, who engineered, answered your calls, Billy Foster, Ben Birch, Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, Sharon Gordy, our military affairs correspondent, Catherine Bay, our executive producer. And by the way, I don't push this enough, and I guess I should. If you are a Nova M founding member, you can now watch a weekly video of your humble and obedient servant, moi, having fun with letters, emails written by psychopathic listeners. Although you notice, Kathy, the number of those letters has declined dramatically since I decided to read them on the air and include the email address of the freaks who write them. But we've got a couple up. So if you're a Nova M founding member, you can watch these videos. Malloy Unplugged, whatever the home office is calling these things, they allow me to use the caca words, you know. You know, kind of like what Carlin used to do, only, no, not, I'm just talking about the seven bad words. I'm not in any way even approaching a comparison. Please stop. So if you're a NovaM founding member, and if you're not, we certainly would invite you to become one. You can get all this information at novamradio.com. Dave in Brooklyn, who is a NovaM founding member, writes, Mike, I'm listening. He wrote this earlier today. I'm listening to your Friday, last Friday's podcast, and you're talking a bit about Nader. I saw him speak in New York City this week, and you're right, he's getting on, but he's right on as usual on all the issues. And he is so knowledgeable and so smart that I have to support him. I urge you to read or reread the piece his running mate Matt Gonzalez wrote on Obama in Counterpunch a few months ago. And if you think it's worthy, please plug it on the show. Okay, just did. Go to counterpunch.org and just type in Gonzalez and Obama and you'll get the article. Dave goes on, I also would be grateful if you could expand a bit on Nader, especially on the two central questions I expect to run into as a volunteer petitioner helping to get Nader and Gonzalez on the New York State ballot. Those two questions, why Nader didn't cost Al Gore the election in 2000, Al Gore cost Al Gore the election, and two, how can progressive people oppose a black man running for president? And for the answer to that one, see the Gonzalez piece that I just mentioned. Also, the Nader for President site is votenader.org. Thanks, Mike. Dave, Brooklyn. Nader's positions, yeah, you know, love him, hate him, make snotty remarks about him like I have, about, you know, he rises out of the crypt every 4 years and expects people to say, oh, you're back, hello, you want to be president this time? You know, and those are snotty, sarcastic remarks on my part. And I probably sincerely somewhere regret them. If you read Nader's website, read his position, you may already know this because Nader is not exactly a newbie. He's been around for a while. But if you read his positions on these issues, again, whether you like him or hate him, support him or think he's a cartoon figure, it doesn't make any difference. His position on the issues are exactly the positions a liberal Democrat would take, if such a thing as a liberal Democrat still existed, which apparently it does not, unless, how's that for a compound sentence, you consider Ralph Nader as a liberal Democrat. Maybe one of the reasons Nader never really made it big in American politics, aside from the fact that for some reason he just never got the organization together. I know. He was on the ballot in all the states and so on and so forth. But I mean, really, really a gung-ho organization. And in order to do that, of course, you have to collect millions and millions and millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars. So that's part of the reason. But another reason may be the fact that Ralph Nader is of Lebanese descent.
Lebanese? You mean he's an Arab?
See, this is the kind of crap that you would get from the average knuckle-dragging American conservative. Even though every position Nader takes would benefit a working-class American conservative.
He's a Lebaneser? Oh, damn! What's his middle name? Osama?
So, probably to some degree, Nader's, ethnicity or his heritage might have had an effect on his not running. But then again, Danny Thomas was Lebanese too, right?
Who?
Marlo Thomas's father.
Who?
Never mind. Listen, it's been a slice of heaven tonight. I'll see you tomorrow night, okay? Honest to God, we will be here. I may have my arm amputated a little bit later this evening, but we will be here tomorrow night. So in the meantime, take care, all right? Seriously, and keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.